Up next here on Downtown, we continue our salute to the 50th anniversary of a local treasure, Penobscot Theater Company, celebrating, leading up to a big 50th anniversary gala later this month. And we are talking with some of the people who are a huge part of that history. And our next guest is a former artistic director at the theater from 2005 to 2011. These days, he is working as the executive director at Greenbox out in Colorado. Scott R.C. Levy joins us. Scott, good to talk with you.
You too, Rich.
Well, tell us a little bit about this job out in Colorado. And I understand Greenbox began as a festival, but now this is a very impressive year-round arts organization.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Greenbox started 15 years ago, and we are located in this beautiful, tiny mountain town, tinier than Bangor, of Green Mountain Falls. It has a year-round residency of 800 people. And yes, the foundation of our work is an annual multidisciplinary visual and performing arts festival every summer. But we have a year-round artist-in-residency program where we invite artists from any discipline from all over the world to stay and live with us for 30 days and to make work. And we have 13 public art installations on display, including our now world-famous Green Mountain Falls Sky Space by James Turrell, which has been open for about a year and has seen visitors from just about every corner of the globe. So we have a lot of wonderful activities in this sort of idyllic Shangri-La kind of environment, and it's a really special place.
Well, that sounds amazing. So are you a Westerner now?
I have cowboy boots and everything.
Well, let's go back to the journey that led you to Bangor back in 05. What was it that interested you in this position and coming to Bangor, Maine to try and make art?
Well, I was getting to a place after having a very long career in New York City where I was looking for an opportunity to have an artistic home. And the opportunity at Penobscot Theater arose, and having spent my entire childhood in New England, in Connecticut, I was very excited by the opportunity to join the community in Maine and to usher in the next era of Penobscot Theater. And the cards aligned, and I was so thankful that the board of directors at the time decided that I was the right person to move the organization forward after Mark Torres decided to end his tenure.
What were some of the biggest challenges you had to face stepping in there?
Well, I mean, you know, keeping oil in the tanks in the opera house so that the heat would go, that was a big challenge. You know, the challenge wasn't always so much necessarily creatively or artistically, because Bangor has always had such a rich artistic community. I think that it was more about the actual logistics and infrastructure and being the steward of that impressive historic building and making sure that it was operational every day really was, to some degree, the biggest challenge during the time that I was there.
I want to talk about some of the things that you did during your time at the theater, and a big one was taking the theater to the people, not just with touring productions, but with the education program that your wife Joey was such a big part of. Why was it important, do you think, in this rural area for theater to get out of that space?
Well, in just the way you said it, of bringing the art to the community, you know, that the Penobscot Theater and the art happening within the company is not about a building. And as important, as I just noted, of being the steward of the historic Bangor Opera House, but ensuring that people in every corner of the great state of Maine and to some degree beyond had the opportunity to be engaged with our work is not only a way for us to introduce the next generation of theater goers and potentially theater artists to the magic of live theater, but to some, you know, in a way, it was also a marketing technique, because sometimes you have to go and introduce what you're doing to the people before they are going to come to your home. So I think that it was a way to not only increase theatrical awareness to the greater population and of all ages, but certainly I think we did focus a lot on the youth of Maine, but also to then in turn increase participation and advocacy for Penobscot Theater's work in our home.
You also started something that I just loved being a part of and watching as well, and that was the Northern Rites Festival.
Yeah, that was really fun to be able to have a new play festival with hundreds of submissions from playwrights every year and have that. You know, it's funny because it's almost like, in a way, like the festival that I run now in Colorado, in having so many events in such a short period of time and having playwrights come and visit and having actors work on multiple scripts at the same time and having audiences be able to hear these scripts before anyone else and be able to provide feedback to playwrights who, for the most part, were in attendance, and then to see the future life that some of those plays took on was really wonderful. And I think that was a really great program all the way around, not just for the local community, but the larger community of theatrical playwrights in North America.
We're talking with Scott Levy here on Downtown in celebration of Penobscot Theater's 50th anniversary. And every time I drive by the Opera House, I think of you because of the great work you and everybody in that time period did in the restoration of the facade of that historic building.
Yes. And that comes back to one of the biggest challenges. I'll take you back, Rich, to December of 2008 when we were completing the work on the facade, you know, and we had to use like the original mortar from 1920 to make a compound again because of the historic nature of the building. And so what we discovered after the fact was that there was an area above the windows of the second floor that has grating, and the grating hadn't been insulated. So here we are, it was opening night of A Year with Frog and Toad, December 2008, and it was cold outside. We lit the marquee for the first time, and all of a sudden the lobby started flooding. And what happened was that the pipes had frozen because that grating hasn't been insulated, and all of the sprinkler system started opening up and flooding our offices and what I believe is now the rehearsal space, Penobscot Theater on the second floor of the Opera House, into the lobby where the opening night audience was gathering. Now, the show went on, and I was proud of that. But that was a moment and an evening I'll never forget.
You mentioned A Year with Frog and Toad, and I think one of the many things that you did in your time at Penobscot Theater was to diversify the holiday offerings. And A Christmas Carol had been an established part of the theater routine, and people loved it. And you did that for a couple of years, did some different versions of it, but also expanded the reach and I think drew a lot more people to the theater that wanted to see something different, still family-oriented, but also then some adult fare, too, for the holidays.
Yeah, and that was always fun. You know, programming a season is one of the greatest challenges and joys of an artistic director, and thinking about what are those shows during the holiday season that are not only going to be entertaining, but might open the audience's eyes to some degree. So to do things like A Year with Frog and Toad and J.M. Barrie's original script of Peter Pan, and then couple it with, like you said, adult holiday fare, like the Santaland Diaries. And there were some holiday seasons where we were doing four performances a day in the Bangor Opera House, which was fabulous. I mean, what an amazing time to have upwards of 2,000 audience members walk in and out of the building in a single day. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. And again, as a way to introduce people to Penobscot Theater for the first time, via a show during a season that is about gathering as a family, and then potentially have those people want to come to another show later in the year and challenge their own artistic tastes. So that was always a lot of fun, whether it was A Christmas Carol or something.
You also, because there had been musicals done, but they were certainly not a regular feature, but you made musicals a part of the season every year at Penobscot Theater.
Yes, and I one of the productions that I always go back to and think about is Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm so excited that Penobscot Theater has decided to produce that show again in this 50th anniversary season. I think that was the spring of either 2007 or 2008. And yes, I mean, I come from an American musical theater background. Musical theater is such an important part of the American theater writ large. And the Bangor Opera House is the kind of space where musicals should be. And so it was always important to, you know, and then I think about the smaller musicals, which actually became, I think, the most attended production during my time at Penobscot Theater, which was Forever Plaid. And so that was a huge hit as well for us.
Well, and I thought, you know, you always have to do this, and I'm sure it's that way at all theaters. You've got to find that balance between things that you're pretty sure will draw a big audience and shows that are also edgy and may not be for everybody. But I thought you walked that tightrope so well during your tenure.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Rich. That means a lot. And I also think that it's about building trust within the community, you know, and sort of recognizing that almost without fail, Penobscot Theater always produces excellent, high-quality productions of theater. And so to be able to go from something like On Golden Ponds and then follow it up with Hedwig and the Angry Inch is only possible because there's a core group of the community who is willing to go along for the ride no matter what it is. And so to be able to produce very important works like I Am My Own Wife and that's the one that's coming to mind, and so many others in cohort with the more populist fare, felt like a really great mix, both for the Penobscot Theater Company of Artists and the community at large.
I felt like you also were instrumental in increasing the production value of shows at Penobscot Theater through your work, but through the wonderfully talented designers that you brought in, people like Lex Lang and so many others who just really elevated the game.
Yeah, it's always fun to you know, whoever the creative personnel is, whatever their work is, whether they're an actor or a musician or a designer or a director, to be able to have those guest artists come in and to have the core group, the local community, learn from them was always exciting. And that makes me think of the production of To Kill a Mockingbird, which was one of the last productions that I directed there. The lighting designer was a young lighting designer at the time who has now gone off to win two Tony Awards. His name is Bradley King. So helping to start the career of artists who have then gone on to much larger careers is wonderful.
So, Scott, what do you remember best about your time at Penobscot Theater?
There's so many just wonderful memories. Most of them include you, Rich. but truthfully, it really is about the community. I mean, I've been away from Bangor longer than I was in it. And there's something about that community that I have not felt I can replicate anywhere else. The passion, the care that the people have for each other, the ability to sort of say yes and in the world of improv and not just say no. There's magic in the Queen City, and I'm just thrilled that I was able to be a part of it for a while.
And I look at the pictures online, and my goodness, Gabe and Ellie are all grown up. How did that happen?
Oh, yes, my children. My daughter is in college at Sarah Lawrence in her first semester, and Gabriel, who was born in Bangor, is now a freshman in high school, and time just marches on.
It sure does. Well, Scott, it's great to have a chance to reminisce with you. I'm so appreciative of all the opportunities you gave me when you were here and the great work you did at Penobscot Theater. And by the way, tell Joey, and I got this from the source, that she was the one Barney Cashman really wanted most of all in Last of the Red Hot Lovers.
Oh, yes. Well, that's right. What a great show that was, too. Rich Kimball stole the show in Last of the Red Hot Lovers. You had every other line in that show.
I'm still tired from that. It took its toll. Well, Scott, it's great to talk with you. We wish you continued success at Greenbox, and thanks so much for making some time to share Penobscot Theater memories with us today.
Thanks so much, Rich.